In the early 2000s, a small Canadian device became so addictive that Intel chairman Andy Grove suggested it should be reported to the DEA. The BlackBerry transformed how we communicated, blurring the boundaries between work and personal life. When Oprah Winfrey declared on her show that it had literally changed my life, BlackBerry transcended business tools to become a cultural phenomenon. Behind this revolution were two brilliant but flawed leaders with complementary skills. Mike Lazaridis, a technical genius who taught himself electronics from the boy electrician in his Windsor basement, and Jim Balsillie, a fiercely ambitious businessman who had mapped his path to Canada's business elite by age 12. Their partnership began in 1992 when Balsillie, after being excluded from an acquisition deal, investigated RIM, though not before Lazaridis' fiancé warned that Balsillie was a shark. Together, they created a device that delivered what one early adopter would pay anything for. Freedom from the nightly hotel ritual of catching up on emails, replaced by the ability to process messages during downtime. How do you launch a revolutionary product with just $5 million, a fraction of competitors' budgets? RIM's answer was brilliance in simplicity. Balsillie recruited fresh graduates from Wilfrid Laurier University as wireless email evangelists rather than industry veterans. These recruits perfected the puppy dog pitch, letting executives borrow BlackBerries for a month, knowing they'd become dependent on instant email. They taught users to cradle the device and thumb type to overcome keyboard skepticism. Sales teams created dramatic demonstrations, with Phil McRoberts flinging devices against walls to prove durability. Most ingeniously, RIM designed software executives could install in 15 minutes without IT approval, and priced devices at $399 to $499 within discretionary spending limits. This created a Trojan horse effect. Once enough senior leaders adopted BlackBerries, IT departments faced pressure to integrate them company-wide, making BlackBerry the first major technology product successfully sold from the top down. While competitors pursued all-in-one devices, Lazaridis focused exclusively on wireless email, believing multi-purpose systems wasted bandwidth and created poor interfaces. BlackBerry messages used minimal network spectrum, making them remarkably efficient. The company primarily feared Microsoft, whose executives had shown interest. Balsillie's approach was never moon the gorilla. He deliberately downplayed RIM's potential, positioning BlackBerry as merely a pager-like service complementing Microsoft's Exchange. When Microsoft became distracted by its battle with Apple, RIM managed other competitors through its BlackBerry Connect program. While seemingly licensing its email system to handset makers, RIM actually used it as a Trojan horse, collecting fees while intentionally delaying software deliveries and withholding features. Nokia wasted 2 years developing BlackBerry Connect phones before realizing they'd been outmaneuvered. Balsillie made no apologies for this pure art of war strategy, asking, "Show me how else you build a $20 billion company." BlackBerry's explosive growth from 25,000 to 165,000 users in fiscal 2001 created chaos that threatened the company. RIM doubled its workforce to 1,260 employees, scattering operations across multiple buildings and creating communication problems. They launched without a proper billing system. Hundreds of customers used BlackBerries for months without paying, costing millions in lost revenue. More critically, the network buckled under growing traffic, with emails delayed from 20 minutes to 5 hours, contradicting RIM's core promise of being always on, always connected. Wall Street clients bombarded RIM's leadership with complaints, sometimes causing Balsillie to hide under his desk when angry CIOs called. The company culture showed serious strain. Balsillie's harsh management style discouraged celebrating success, while project timelines became what engineer Matthias Wandel called pure fantasy. To cope with stress, employees developed unique outlets, including destruction sessions, where failed prototypes were demolished with sledgehammers or launched into neighboring fields using a modified potato cannon. By November 2005, Jim Balsillie was in crisis. Fighting a patent lawsuit against NTP Inc., he lost 20 pounds and retreated to a Toronto hotel where he sobbed uncontrollably. RIM had underestimated this Virginia shell company that sued them in 2001 for wireless email patent infringement. After court defeats, a judge threatened to shut down BlackBerry service. When their defense collapsed during a courtroom demonstration, Judge Spencer condemned RIM's egregious behavior. RIM settled for $612.5 million in March 2006. Though financially manageable, the case diverted crucial attention from competitors. Executive Patrick Spence noted, "We lost some of who we were. It's not the $612 million, it's what that cost us in terms of taking focus away from where we needed to go." Just as RIM emerged from this battle, Steve Jobs announced the iPhone in January 2007. While Lazaridis recognized the threat, "These guys are really, really good. This is different," most RIM executives dismissed it, believing security issues, battery limitations, and its digital keyboard wouldn't threaten their core business. This fundamental misreading would prove catastrophic. When Verizon and Vodafone sought an iPhone competitor in 2007, Lazaridis unveiled Storm, a touchscreen phone with a clicking screen simulating BlackBerry's tactile keyboard. The carriers committed an estimated $100 million marketing budget but demanded delivery in just 9 months, half RIM's usual development time. Engineers protested the timeline was impossible, with veteran Parry Jarmuszewski rating the project an 11 on a 0 to 10 impossibility scale. Despite these warnings, Lazaridis believed determination could shape reality, influenced by Christian Science and Emmett Fox's sermons. "Mike believes that the mind can will things to happen," Balsillie explained. While early prototypes worked well, mass production revealed serious flaws. RIM shipped an unfinished product to meet Black Friday. Critics were merciless. The New York Times called it head-bangingly frustrating, with more bugs than a summer picnic, while actor Stephen Fry compared typing on it to an antelope trying to open a packet of cigarettes. The Storm's failure damaged RIM's reputation for reliability. When Balsillie visited Verizon in spring 2009, the carrier demanded nearly $500 million in compensation for replacement devices. Though Balsillie negotiated the penalty down to $100 million, the relationship was permanently damaged. By 2010, RIM faced critical decisions: QWERTY or touchscreens, premium or budget markets, closed or open platform. The once complementary co-CEOs began pulling in opposite directions. Lazaridis invested in hardware with the resource-intensive BlackBerry 10 project, while Balsillie pursued software strategy, licensing to Chinese manufacturers, and transforming BlackBerry Messenger into a revenue-generating SMS 2.0. Their partnership deteriorated after a 2009 stock options backdating scandal, where Balsillie paid a $5 million fine and lost his directorship, while Lazaridis paid just $1.5 million. The relationship collapsed when Balsillie discovered Lazaridis had separately approached regulators. A devastating 3-day global service outage in October 2011, affecting 70 million users, hastened the decline. Both co-CEOs resigned by December, with Thorsten Heinz taking over briefly before John Chen. Under Chen, BlackBerry contracted from 20,000 employees and $20 billion in revenue to 6,225 employees and $3.3 billion by 2015. BlackBerry's story offers both inspiration and warning, showing how visionary leadership can create revolutionary products while demonstrating how quickly technological advantages vanish when companies fail to adapt.